This is Fresh Air. It's that time of the year again when we ask our book critic Maureen Corrigan for her list of the year's best books. So here's Maureen with her top 10 list.
Many of the best of this year's books were graced with humor and distinguished by deep dives into American identity. Oddly, it was also a very good year for deceased authors, whose posthumously published books were so much more than mere postscripts to their careers. Rebecca Mackay's novel, The Great Believers, is my pick for novel of the year. It's a sweeping story about the AIDS epidemic of the 1980s and its long, numb aftermath. As one of the main characters says about the random cruelty of AIDS, "This disease has magnified all our mistakes. Some stupid thing you did when you were 19, the one time you weren't careful, and it turns out that was the most important day of your life." The Great Believers is filled with vivid characters, absorbing questions about art, belief, and transcendence, and most improbably, lots of wit. Speaking of wit, Gary Steingart's Lake Success dusts off our most hallowed literary trope, the on-the-road novel, and takes it for a satirical spin through an America on the verge of a Trump presidency. His anti-hero is Barry Cohen, a New York finance guy whose life has imploded, prompting Barry to board a Greyhound bus and light out for the territory. The end of the road finds Barry in California, which is where Tommy Orange's inspired debut novel, There, There, is set. Oakland, California, to be precise, the place about which Gertrude Stein once said, "There is no there there." Orange's story, which focuses on a group of urban Native Americans, begins with an unforgettable 10-page prologue that riffs on some 500 years of Native people's history, presented mostly through the image of Indian heads. Two other novels on my best of the year list are set long ago and far away. Warlight by Michael Ondaatje is a memory tale about two children abandoned to the care of a stranger in the London of 1945. Need I even say, at this point in Ondaatje's celebrated career, that the writing here is gorgeous? Listen to this description of post-war London. "There were parts of the city where you saw no one, only a few children, walking solitary, listless as small ghosts. The city still felt wounded, uncertain of itself. It allowed one to be ruleless. Everything had already happened, hadn't it?" Washington Black by Essie Edwigen is also a historical novel narrated by a child, but there the comparisons end. Opening on a sugar plantation in Barbados in 1830, the story is told by an enslaved 11-year-old boy known as Wash. Wash escapes from that plantation via hot air balloon, no less, and Edwigen herself breaks away from the confines of the conventional, transporting readers into the giddy realms of Romantic-era travelogue and scientific exploration. A nonfiction book about slavery opened up more of that harrowing history for readers this year. Zora Neale Hurston's Barracoon was crafted out of interviews she did in Alabama in 1927 with Cudjoe Lewis. Lewis, then 86, was the last known living person who could recount firsthand the experience of having been captured in Africa and taken on a slave ship to the United States. Hurston's manuscript was completed in 1931, but publishers back then weren't interested. Barracoon is a monumental little book that dramatizes two extraordinary voices in conversation. Another posthumous book on my list is Dennis Johnson's short story collection, The Largesse of the Sea Maiden. When Johnson wrote at reckless full force, as he does in many of these stories about divorce, dying, and Elvis impersonators, his words blasted barriers, discovering those odd places where, as one of his narrators here says, the mystery winks at you. One mystery in particular obsessed the late Michelle McNamara, the cold case of a serial predator she dubbed the Golden State Killer. McNamara was midway into writing an account of this monster's crimes when she died in her sleep at age 46. Colleagues drew on her research to complete the book called I'll Be Gone in the Dark. It's not only a great true crime narrative, but also a nuanced investigation into McNamara's own preoccupation with the Golden State Killer. By the way, a suspect was arrested this spring, a couple of months after McNamara's book came out. The only violence in Michelle Dean's nonfiction book Sharp is the verbal kind. Sharp is an entertaining and erudite cultural history of 10 women who became critics and public intellectuals, even though, as Dean says, they came up in a world that was not eager to hear women's opinions about anything. Dean's subjects include the aforementioned Zora Neale Hurston, Mary McCarthy, Pauline Kael, and the immortal Dorothy Parker. Sharp is a word I'd certainly apply to Sarah Smarsh, whose memoir, Heartland, wraps up this year's list. Smarsh hails from the white rural working class, and she writes about politics, race, cooking with Crisco, and class contempt with a lyrical boldness. I wish everyone this holiday season the gift of good books and plenty of time to read them.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University.